You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This segment is sponsored by Ducks Unlimited. Join the thousands of volunteers having fun more than 3,500 times a year. Get involved at www.volunteerfordu.org.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Dreeslein. Thanks a lot for tuning in. We've got a lot to talk about, as usual, a lot to talk about. There's a whole bunch of news stories that broke this week. We're going to talk with Tim Lesmeister about those to kick off the show. Then we'll have Tony Peterson for the second week in a row. A lot of deer content this week. We're going to talk with Tony about summer scouting. And then Melissa Bachman will join us. We'll check in with Melissa, see how she's doing, and talk about trail cameras and some of those sorts of topics. With that, Tim, hey, it's good to see you. You are smelling smoke up on your place on Lake Superior, it sounds like, huh?
Not only smelling smoke, it's hard for me to see out more than about probably 100 yards over the water. If you walk outside, it smells like you're standing literally right next to the fire. It's crazy.
Yeah, as we record, I was not getting any smoke in the Twin Cities, although I think we're going to get some probably by the time folks are listening to this broadcast. This is a story that's changing rapidly, as fire often does. It was challenging to report it for this week's print edition of Outdoor News because, again, we're forecasting what's happening. But as of early this week, we had, I think, 20 fires, at least 20 individual fires across the Superior National Forest. I think three or four of them were in the boundary waters. I know a couple of them combined to make one larger fire, so they combined it into one large fire. Just in the boundary waters, as we speak, we were probably in the 30,000 acre range of fire that of acres burned. I presume there's a lot more when you include the areas outside the wilderness. Not the biggest fires we've seen, although, again, by the time we're talking here, the combination of heat, dryness, and wind, we could be talking, you know, one of the bigger fires in recent Minnesota memory up there.
I think what really hurts is the wind. Of course, being dry as it is, and then having these thunderstorms come through, and they're not, you know, real heavy duty rain storms. They're heavy duty thunder and lightning storms. So everything right now is like a big tinderbox. And when that lightning hits, boom, it's really a bad situation. It's dry. You got these crazy storms starting all these different fires in areas that are drier than a bone in the wind. The wind is the catalyst that just really spreads these things quickly. So, yeah, we've got a lot of smoke, a lot of what we, I guess the smell is just incredible. So, yeah, I think it's going to hang in there for a while now.
And I heard earlier this week a fire on Isle Royale. I did not run that down to confirm, although the source that reported it was very solid, a friend of mine on social media. The boundary waters completely shut down. They evacuated it. They told everyone to get out of there. I presume they got most people out. There's like, 2,000 campsites in the boundary water. So a lot of folks up there had to cut their trip short or did not get to go out on their trips. Parts of the Fernberg Road east of Ely were being evacuated early this week. My son has a friend who said he's got a permit on July 25th. And he said, "Dad, that's next weekend. What do you think? Is my buddy going to be able to get out?" And I said, "It looks like cooler temperatures. It looks like some rain coming through there." It would seem to me, Tim, that a lot of outfitters are going to be, I mean, this is peak season. This is when these guys make their money. There's going to be a pressure from outfitters on the Forest Service to open things back up. I see you shaking your head. You don't think it's going to happen by next weekend?
I do not think so. I think that this is going to have the boundary waters shut down for 2 to 3 weeks minimum. I think that what you're going to see here, they always say that we're going to try and contain the fires. Fires get this big, it's pretty hard to contain them. And, you know, there's a lot of carryovers smoldering and, you know, this stuff doesn't just get put out. And so I think what they're going to do is they're going to keep it shut down for a while. It's going to be devastating to towns like Ely, not just the outfitters that are handling permits and gear for individuals that are going in, but for the people that have restaurants and the motels, everybody that has anything to do with people that are using the boundary waters. It's tough.
I'm seeing temperatures forecasted for Ely getting back closer to normal with some moisture, with some precipitation. Again, this is something that's changing hourly, folks. So stay in touch with your outfitter, stay in touch with the Forest Service, monitoroutdoornews.com. We will post updates as we get them. But a big story, you know, that erupted late last week. It sounded like a thunderstorm came through there without a lot of moisture, like July 7th, July 8th, something like that, Tim, last week. And that got things ignited. And the combination of this just, you know, we got temperatures that are what, minimum 20 degrees above normal across most of the state, combined with not a lot of moisture recently and wind, like we were talking about. It's created this conflagration up there. And fire seasons they're getting worse, and we're seeing more of them. Star Tribune reported that earlier this week. Since the mid-1990s, we're seeing more forest fires up there. This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline and Tim Lesmeister kicking off this week's show. The other big story that broke on Monday, shame on me for not sniffing this out a little bit sooner, but the DNR brass sent a note to all of their staff telling them that Kelly Straka, the Fish and Wildlife Division Director, for the past 2 years, she's been with the agency for about 5 years. I believe she was the wildlife director for 3 years before that, has decided to leave the agency. I don't know. I put Kelly in her early to mid 40s, something like that. It was a bit of a surprise. It seems like most people retire from this position, Tim. I've been here a long time, and just about everybody who has had that job, it's the last job they have before they retire. That is not what Kelly wants to do. Pretty big surprise. I like Kelly a lot, and she was on this show, I don't know, just a month ago when the DNR kicked off its new electronic licensing system. I spent two solid segments with her talking through that. I think she's well-liked. I think she presents very well. I'm sad to see her go, but I guess she's got her personal reasons.
And those personal reasons are very, very strong. She wants to be closer to home. Hermantown, that's a little bit of a distance from where she offices in St. Paul. And she's wants to pursue her veterinary career. She's a veterinarian, and she was that before she got into these roles in the DNR that didn't allow her to pursue that kind of work. And I think she wants to get back to her roots. So I can understand it completely where she's coming from. She's thinking, I want to be closer to home, and I want to be a veterinarian. And I say more power to you.
She wants to work with hunting dogs. Hey, how do you argue with that?
But you're familiar with this new guy that's coming in, and what's he going to be like?
Jason Meckel. Yeah, I first met Jason probably in 1998 or 1999. He was with DNR Fisheries then. I think it was his first probably full-time job out of college. He's only, I believe, a year or two younger than me. He got his grad degree out in Montana. And it's some interesting background there. I'd like to talk to him about. Maybe we'll get him on the show here soon. I went down to the Vermilion River, you know, just Dakota County, just south of the Metro, Tim, and spent an afternoon with him as they were they electroshocking or doing something to look for some of those big browns and some of those tributaries of the Vermilion River. And I was shocked, you know, how big some of those brown trout were 30 minutes from my house here in the Metro. I got to know him, tooled around with him a little bit that day. We had a great day. Jason, a gentleman who was more than happy to kind of bounce around between some of the different parts of the Minnesota DNR, I think, to learn the agency and prepare himself for a role like this. Ecological Services, he spent quite a bit of time there. Fisheries, I don't know if he's ever actually been with wildlife, but certainly has a broad natural resources background. Like I said, I just still think of Jason being fresh out of college in the late 90s, looking like this, you know, just upbeat, you know, newbie, excited kid. He still looks young for his age, I think. But I absolutely think Jason will be a prime candidate for that job, and I'm looking forward to working with him.
Well, this is good because that's the one division of the Department of Natural Resources that has an incredibly direct effect on me. that Fisheries and Wildlife Division. Mm-hmm. So satisfying to me to have someone in that position that actually can do a stellar job.
Yeah, this is the post that oversees the entire division. And you've got your section chiefs. You've got Dave Traba in wildlife. He's been on the show. You've got Brad Parsons on the fisheries side. He's retiring. We're going to get a new fisheries chief, I think, by September. So there's going to be some change there in the brass of the Fish and Wildlife Division. We covered a lot of news there. Grab a break, and you'll come back at the end of the show.
I certainly will.
All right, that's our buddy Tim Lesmeister. Stick around. More Outdoor News Radio after these messages.
This July, it's all happening in Des Moines. The Delta Waterfowl Duck Hunters Expo, presented by Hevy, is coming to town. 3 days, one place, the biggest names in waterfowl. The latest gear, boats, calls, decoys, and hands-on demos from the pros who live it. Bring the whole family. July 24th, 25th, and 26th at the Iowa Event Center. Tickets and event details are available now at deltawaterfowlexpo.com. Don't just talk about duck season. Get ready for it.
Hey everyone, it's Melissa Bachman from Winchester Deadly Passion, and I'm excited to invite you to my Fleet Farm Seminar Tour. This year, I'm going to be making 10 stops across Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, and South Dakota. Join me for a seminar packed with proven deer hunting tactics like rattling, decoying, and even a live Q&A where you can ask anything. Every attendee will be entered to win an incredible prize package worth over $1,000. Visit melissabachman.com for tour dates, locations, and more details.
Elevate your tactical readiness with the Retay USA lineup, where precision meets performance. Build your skills with the RXP-22 handgun and the RA-15-22 rifle and pistol. When the mission demands full power reliability, turn to the 724 Patrol. Powered by Retay's patented Inertia Plus system, this combat-proven 12-gauge shotgun offers ultra-fast cycling, total modularity, and optics-ready performance. Experience the full tactical edge at RetayUSA.com.
You know the drill. You got a free Saturday, the boat's ready, but you're scrolling through the same tired fishing reports trying to figure out where to go. Stop guessing and start catching. Onyx Fish lets you filter thousands of Midwest lakes by species, trophy potential, even keeper size, all backed by real DNR survey data. Plus, Onyx Fish is brand new on Android, so no more excuses. Try it free for 7 days. Download Onyx Fish on the App Store or Google Play. Your next favorite lake is out there. Go find it.
Spring coho at Steelhead are on, and Ken's is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of three prime ports. Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced, rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Ken Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
Looking for the ultimate Minnesota outdoor experience? Join us at Game Fair 2026, returning to the Armstrong Ranch in Ramsey on August 7th, 8th, and 9th, and August 14th, 15th, and 16th. Explore more than 80 acres packed with the latest hunting gear, outdoor exhibits, field demonstrations, dog events, and hands-on activities for the whole family. Since 1982, Game Fair is where the outdoors comes alive. Find tickets and more information at gamefair.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Jerisline. I hope you like the content here every week. If so, check us out online at outdoornews.com or call us at 800-535-5191. You can subscribe to our print or digital version. And of course, you can also renew your subscription at Game Fair and the State Fair coming up here next month. Get a free cap if you renew at either of those two events. Tony Peterson joining me here for another week. He was with us a week ago. We spoke about some fishing opportunities. Thought we'd transition, talk maybe deer and dogs a little bit. Tony, welcome back. Good to see you again.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, big time heat here as we get into late July. Go figure. It should be one of the hottest months of the year. But we talk about summer scouting for white-tailed deer a little bit. It's a hair challenging when you're approaching three figures and a ton of humidity in this part of the world, huh?
It can be a little gross out there, but I honestly think in the whitetail world, the most overlooked opportunity now is the early season thing with bow hunting. Like I know you used to work in the hunting magazine side of things, and I did, and it wasn't that long ago where patterning a summer buck or, you know, a bachelor group and then going out and trying to target them in mid-September when the opener kicks in was like a, it was like a big strategy. Like that was a thing a lot of people did. And now it feels like that's sort of taken like a major backseat to rut hunting. And I still think that in a lot of states, and I think Minnesota, especially because of our early gun season, if you go out and put in your time now to pattern, to throw a pattern on a buck for that, you know, I think September 19th, the opener this year, I almost think that's a better chance for a lot of people than rut hunting. And nobody wants to do it, like you said, because when it's, you know, 90 degrees and 100% humidity and the bugs are out, it's just no fun. But those deer, you can figure them out. And it's a really good chance for a big one.
How do you go about that summer scouting right now then, Tony? You know, you don't want to spook deer out of their habits, right? You want to try to be viewing them from 30,000 feet as best you can, don't you?
I'm not quite as concerned about spooking deer. I mean, I definitely try not to, but we have sort of been fed this strategy of always err on the side of caution. Don't go blow him off his pattern. Don't go in there. And that's part of that has just come in lockstep with the trail camera thing, right? Like go out, throw out some trail cameras and you can learn all you need to learn without ever going in there. And I don't really subscribe to that. Like I run a lot of trail cameras depending on what, where I'm hunting and what I'm hunting, but laying eyes on deer, to me, you can't beat it. Like you learn more about what they do by watching them than you will by getting a bunch of trail camera videos or photos. Using both is better, but we've kind of stepped away from that long range glassing, you know, watch them in the summer. And I think that's a mistake because it's, to me, that's the most valuable time I can spend for whitetails in the summer.
So long range glassing, that just means you're out in your pickup, you pull up to a logical spot where you can overlook a field or something and pull out the binoculars and study it, huh?
Well, I don't do a lot of glassing from my truck. Like I know that's definitely a thing, but when you get into, at least in my experience, if I have bucks that are going to be out in daylight, which is what I'm looking for, obviously, they're not going to be that visible from a road. Like they're going to be in some kind of corner or some kind of draw or something where it's just not, you're going to have to get out and go find them. And that's what I love about it is, you know, this time of year, the corn's tall enough where you can slip through and stay hidden. And, you know, obviously you're watching soybeans or alfalfa or something like that. But I almost always have to plan out, how am I going to get in? What's the wind going to be doing? And especially how am I going to get out? Because you get into a spot and sit on the, you know, point of a cornfield over an alfalfa field or something, you're going to have deer coming to you or coming out, you know, in your general area, and then you got to get out without blowing them out. And so a lot of times I go out, you know, I'll pick a spot where I can see some back corner or something. And then when it's really starting to get good, I have to leave because there's deer getting too close. Mm-hmm. But by that point, you've learned a lot already.
And whether it's crops or antlers, everything's growing out there right now, isn't it? I mean, in this heat and humidity, man, oh man, the corn is growing inches per day, I think.
It's crazy.
And antler growth is also accelerating quite quickly, right?
That whole process is just incredible. When you dig into how they put on that much bone in that short amount of time is just wild. And they, you know, when you really dig into it, you know, they have certain needs, right? Like nutritional needs to facilitate that. And they will go so hard on the food sources that give them the best chance of growing a lot of bone quickly. And so you can sort of cater it just happens to be that a lot of the scouting happens on those same food sources that are really beneficial to them. But there's sort of a lesson in there that all deer, but bucks, you know, obviously they eat for performance somehow.
It makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's the same thing. You know, a doe will eat certain things because she's nursing fawns. But, you know, there's kind of a disconnect now because, you know, who cares what they eat now? I want to know what they're eating in September and October when I can hunt them. But they eat for a purpose a lot of times. And so, mm-hmm. you know, you think about, like, you think about a mast crop, like acorns, right? Like the white oaks drop and deer like the flavor of white oak acorns. So they go eat them. It's like, no, you look at the nutritional breakdown of that. And it's like, that's literally the best food they're going to get right now for what they're doing, what their bodies are doing.
Outdoor News Radio, Rob Dreisline and Tony Peterson are catching up, talking some mid-season deer topics. Yeah, I've got a hunting question for you, an archery question, Tony. As you know, I was big time into archery in the mid-1990s. I had three or four bows. They're still at my dad's place, who is now downsizing. And he's got these bows. He's like, Rob, what do we do with these bows? Any thoughts? Mid-90s era compound bows, are they worth restringing and still using? Should I be donating them? What are your impressions? Go ahead and be honest. If you think I should just not be a tightwad and buy a new bow, tell me.
I mean, they're probably not worth much if you went to sell them. That was kind of an era when a lot of people got into bow hunting.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. A lot of them out there. Yeah.
Right. I think if you're going to get back into it, you should go shopping.
Okay. Tony, before we go, we should talk pups just a little bit. We got Game Fair coming up here in less than a month. This is the season when a lot of folks, maybe they've got a new pup. I know you've talked about how a lot of people associate this time of year with, well, hey, we got 4, 5, 6 months before the snow flies. This is a good time to get a pup. So there's a lot of people out there working with their dog the first time right now. What are some mistakes you see people making with young dogs in the summer, especially?
You know, this time of year is interesting because a lot of people get spring pups. And right. So those pups are starting to get to the teenage stage, you know, toward the back half of summer. And that's when trainers get a lot of calls. Hey, my dog does this. My dog doesn't do that. The benefit of having a summer pup is how much you can do outside with them, obviously, right? And you have a lot of opportunities to socialize them, you know, the kids' soccer game or whatever. Like, there's so many opportunities. You've got water you can work with, you know. So even if you have a dog that's not going to be a duck dog, comfort in water, the proper water introduction. You can take care of so much of stuff like that right now. And it's so easy to facilitate. You know, other times of the year, it's just not. And so I always look at this as like, if you're sitting on a 3 month or a 6 month old pup, the amount of training opportunities that are out there, they're just beyond tossing a bumper in the soccer field or whatever, you know, like actually intentionally socializing your dog, like going through the steps of, you know, wing introduction or water introduction, like all of that stuff is just logistically easier to do right now. And if you have a pup, you should be doing that stuff.
Socializing with people is what you're really stressing. Not necessarily socializing with other dogs, right? There can be issues where older dogs correct a right. pup that can cause long-term problems.
Yeah, that's a great point. Puppies love to jump on mature dogs' heads, right? Like that's where they go for. And, you know, you might have a golden retriever that would tolerate that forever, but the person at the park with a German shepherd, that might be a different story.
Right.
Yeah. Socializing is primarily your behavior around not just humans, but in kind of dynamic environments with new stuff. And that's really what socializing is. And a lot of training is you're just giving that dog confidence in new situations. And so you think about a dog that's been, you know, to the kids' softball games every Tuesday and Thursday or whatever. And there's tons of people and people come up and pet it and, you know, a lot of things going on. That dog just gets more comfortable in that environment. You know, mm-hmm. like you should train in a variety of environments. Just like if you have an upland dog, that dog will encounter, depending on where you hunt, you know, it might have to hunt in the cattails for a week and it might have to hunt in the CRP and it might have to hunt in, you know, the big woods and for woodcock and grouse. And the more you train in those environments, the more comfortable that dog gets, not only just being there, but solving problems in those different habitats and environments. And that is like the key. Like the more you can do that with a dog and make them confident and comfortable, the rest of your life will be better.
And then real quick, Tony, water introduction. Water should be real easy for labs and golden retrievers and chessies if you do it properly, right? You just want it to be a positive experience. Let the pup encounter water kind of on its own a little bit in a shallow situation where it can go in. You don't want a dog falling in off the dock or right. super cold water or something like that, right?
Man, even with the retrievers, even with labs and goldens, you'll run into dogs that won't go into water. And some of it is just an innate fear, and some of it is that bad introduction where they fell off a dock. And find warm water that has a hard sloping bottom, so there's not like something, you know, a ledge they're going to fall off and all of a sudden they're swimming. You know, you find something they can enter gradually. I generally say non-moving water, but if you had the right river situation, you'd be fine. But low pressure, make it fun, right. Play with them in the heat, you know, go out on the baseball field and throw that bumper and really heat them up. And then a very soft intro and keep the other dogs, keep other people out of it. Keep it very simple And, you know, when that thing clicks, which it does for a lot of dogs, it's just, okay, you're like, I'm good. I'm done.
Yep.
But when it goes wrong, it's like a mini version of gun shyness. Like you can get a dog back from being scared of water. It'll just take you, you know, like it'll take you some time and it'll be frustrating. Just like if you have a gun shy dog, you can get them back, but it's like not easy and not fun.
Right. Yeah. And that, and of course, here we are in the shadow of 4th of July. We should have had this conversation a couple of weeks ago, but fireworks, you know, you need to introduce a dog to guns, shots appropriately. And I've seen it done the right way. And when it's done the right way, it's a slam dunk.
Right.
It's not difficult, but you just got to be careful to not create a problem, especially with fireworks around a young dog.
Big time. Yeah. Gunfire, loud noises, water introduction, and live birds are generally three things that you want to just... You want to get those right, because if you do, you're going to have a much easier life with that dog. And if you get any one of them wrong, you're going to have a real challenge ahead of you.
Wow, great advice. Tony, so fun to talk to you again. We'll circle back with you maybe this fall when we get into archery seasons and talk some tactics. But thanks a lot. Enjoy the rest of the summer, my friend.
Awesome. Thanks, Rob.
Tony Peterson, read what he's got cooking at themeateater.com. Let's break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
The Woodstock for Hunters Hunt Stock is coming to Wisconsin to the Dodge County Fairgrounds in Beaver Dam, July 17th through the 19th. Hang out with all the boys from the hunting public. Seminars from Lanny Benoit, Dan Infault, Barry Wenzel, John Eberhardt, Billy Malls, Jared Scheffler, and Dan Small. Huge giveaways, top hunting exhibitors, 3D archery, live music, and campsites right there. Plan ahead and get your tickets online at huntstockevents.com. Use code RADIO at checkout to save 10%. Hunt Stock. Feels less like a trade show, more like a deer camp.
Looking for the ultimate Minnesota outdoor experience? Join us at Game Fair 2026, returning to the Armstrong Ranch in Ramsey on August 7th, 8th, and 9th, and August 14th, 15th, and 16th. Explore more than 80 acres packed with the latest hunting gear, outdoor exhibits, field demonstrations, dog events, and hands-on activities for the whole family. Since 1982, Game Fair is where the outdoors comes alive. Find tickets and more information at gamefair.com.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
From the Alaskan wilderness to the Atlantic Flyway, across America's Great Plains and down the Mississippi Delta, Ducks Unlimited has protected and restored habitat for nearly 90 years. We need your help to reach our next million-acre milestone and ensure waterfowl for generations to come. Whether you're selling tickets, securing donations, or finding that next sponsor, there's a role for everyone. Join today at ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation for a continent.
There are lakes across Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and beyond that are loaded with fish. And nobody's talking about them. Onyx Fish helps you find them. Search by species, filter for big walleye, trophy panfish, or eater crappies. Check satellite imagery, depth maps, and public access points, all before you leave the house. And now, Onyx Fish is available on Android for the first time. iPhone, Android, doesn't matter. Just download it and start planning. 7-day free trial, then just $35 a year. Onyx Fish. Find new lakes, get there with confidence.
From sunrise casts to sunset stories by the fire, Fireside Lodge is more than a fishing trip. It's an experience worth coming back to. Cast your line into pristine northwestern Ontario waters, reel in the catch of a lifetime, and unwind in comfort at the end of the day. Whether it's your first trip or an annual tradition, Fireside Lodge delivers the experience you've been waiting for. Book your 2026 adventure today at firesidelodge.com or call 1-800-545-0815.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Gerisline. Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you like the content of the broadcast. If so, check us out online at outdoornews.com or call us at 800-535-5191. Hey, we are getting into the middle of summer. We're starting to bear down on hunting seasons, particularly deer hunting seasons. Everyone looks forward to that across the upper Midwest. And it's a great opportunity to check in with my old friend. She's not as old as me, but I've known her a long time. Melissa Bachman, host of Winchester's Deadly Passion. She's got a great seminar tour coming up here. The Fleet Farm Seminar Tour runs August 10th to August 15th. And I thought that'd be a great time to check in with her and talk a little deer hunting. Melissa, it's great to see you. How are you and your family doing?
Everybody's doing great. Great to hear and talk to you again, Rob. And I appreciate you having me on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I look forward to talking to you a couple times a year. My daughter always likes meeting you at the Deer Classic or some of the other shows at your event. You're great with kids, and it's fun to watch young people respond to you. Like I say, you've got this Fleet Farm Seminar Tour going on next month, August 10th to the 15th. You got, I think, 3 stops in Minnesota, 4 stops in Wisconsin, 1 in Iowa, and 1 in South Dakota. You've got a really full agenda, and I'm just kind of looking at some of the things you're going to be talking about. One thing is trail cameras. This is really a great time to get out and mess around with trail cameras, isn't it?
Yes, it really is. In fact, most of our day today, we've been getting trail cameras ready. And, you know, bucks are really starting to see that kind of final growth. And for kids, they love going out and helping with that. And that's one of the things I like talking about in these seminars is not only ways to make you a better hunter, but ways to get your entire family involved. And I think trail cameras are just so much fun for everybody involved. It's the best way to kind of kick off hunting season, in my opinion.
Can you give us a couple of, you know, quick trail camera tactics? You know, how do you deploy them without leaving a lot of scent, especially if you're getting the family involved? I mean, it's great. It's important to get the family involved, but how do you reconcile, you know, those two concerns?
Yeah, you know, one of the things we like to do is we put rubber boots usually on everybody, and then we spray down with Scent Killer Gold before going out into the field. And you've got your trail cameras. What we want to do is kind of minimize that time in the field, especially if you're bringing kids. There's a lot of talking. You try to keep people quiet. So we already have our batteries in. We have the cards in. We check them at home to make sure that there's no issues. And then we have a plan as to where we want to go. One of the big things we do is even when we're turkey hunting, when we're scouting, we're marking spots on our Hunt Stand app or whatever app you're using as to where we want those trail cameras. So we're not going out blind. We have a pretty good idea. We have everything ready. And a lot of it's just about being prepared and, you know, finding ways to get the most pictures in front of your camera.
And of course, the end goal isn't just to get great pictures on your trail camera. Those are fun. Those are great. We all enjoy good pictures. But ultimately, we want this to help improve our success this fall. You know, one of the bullet points on your seminar schedule is proven strategies to attract more deer to your setup. Let's talk about that. How do you, and you know, there's illegal ways to do that that we want to discourage people from doing, but there's legal ways that you can bring deer closer to where you're hunting.
Yeah.
Talk about that a little.
Yeah, you know, that's something I've really enjoyed. And we have really found that the power of water is so huge. Even if you have water on your property, if you're giving those deer a place to water where they feel comfortable, it can be huge. We like putting a rub post there. People underestimate the options of rub posts, licking branches, making mock scrapes out in the field, and having that ready. Because what it does, not only does the water bring does in, but then it brings bucks. And then all of a sudden, you're creating kind of a little social network right in that area where the bucks want to come. They want to check everything out. And not only do you get great pictures, but again, if you're hunting, you have them in front of your stand for longer periods of time. It gives you a chance to kind of calm your nerves, maybe put your sandwich or your phone down and get ready to take that shot. So that's always the things that I'm trying to do is draw them in and keep them there and keep them comfortable. And I love decoying. I cover decoying. I cover rattling. I love using different tactics to bring them in and keep them in longer.
Melissa, you've been doing your seminar tour, this one, for several years. And of course, you've been a regular attendee and seminar speaker at deer shows around the country for a long time. What are some of the most common questions that you get? And what are some of your answers to those questions?
You know, I think one of the most common things people look at is, okay, so maybe I was taught this way. I've never tried decoying, for example, or I've done it and, you know, a couple does got spooked off. What am I doing wrong? And so much of this is learning and adapting as you go. And what I always try to tell people is what works in one area doesn't always work the next area. Also, what works one day doesn't always work the next day. So you have to learn and you really have to watch deer. I believe one of the reasons I've become so successful is because I spend so much time in the field. I'm out there almost every single day during the rut. I'm watching what those bucks are doing, and you can learn a lot from that. Watch their mannerisms. Watch what happens right before a fight. And for example, when I have a decoy out, I like to do a little bit of calling. I'll do a couple soft grunts, maybe a snort wheeze, but the cadence that I use is exactly what I've seen in nature. I'll have two different grunt tubes, so it sounds like two different bucks. Then I'll do a snort wheeze just simply with my mouth. And a lot of times that's telling the other buck, you better back off right now or there's going to be a fight. After that, hit those rattling antlers together. And again, try to make it realistic. And you can't be doing that every like 3 minutes. Sometimes people overdo it. They want it so bad. But again, you just need to be patient. You need to wait and you need to watch and adapt. I think that's probably one of the most important things you can do as a hunter.
You're listening to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Zerisline. We are chatting with Melissa Bachman. She's the host of Winchester's Deadly Passion. You can catch that on the Sportsman's Channel year-round. She's also kicking off her Fleet Farm Seminar Tour. It runs August 10th to the 15th. It's going to be from St. Cloud to Appleton, Wisconsin, back to Rapid City, South Dakota. Melissa, where can folks find more information? Where can they see the specific dates, when and where you will be at these different Fleet Farm stores?
If you go to melissabachman.com, I'll have a graphic right on that front page that tells you the times, the dates. And what's neat is I'm really traveling all across the Midwest in just a short period of time. Yeah. I'm going to two a day. So I really look forward to it. I love talking with people. I love meeting people. I love sharing stories. And, you know, I learn from people as well. So, you know, it kind of becomes a wealth of knowledge over the years of things you learn from others. You go try it yourself. I love just learning from everyone and getting to talk to everyone as well.
All attendees will be registered to win a huge prize package at each of the stores. Is that correct?
Yes. So every store I go to, I gather up all my favorite products. It'll be worth over $1,000, and someone sitting in that seminar will win that huge gift basket. And, you know, it's really neat because a lot of those items, they're what I'm talking about. They're things I use. And one lucky winner literally walks away with an entire cart full of free stuff, and all attendees will get a gift basket, and they will get different products. I have Wildlife Research Center laundry strips. I have No Zone Scents spray. I have all sorts of neat little things for everybody just for coming, but one lucky attendee at each seminar will walk away with a giant gift basket as well. So you know what? Come for the seminar, leave with free gear. It's a win-win situation.
One other quick seminar topic that caught my eye, Melissa, is it looks like you're spending a fair amount of time talking about processing your own game. That's clearly something you probably engage in. Are you finding more interest in that among the rank and file hunters out there?
Yeah, you know, that's something that I really see people being more and more interested in, even people who don't hunt. I'm finding hunters who say, you know, I have a neighbor, they don't hunt, but they ask me to bring them a deer each year because they want to process their own meat. More and more people are finding out what's in our food. They want to have that close experience. And it's something as a family, we've really started to do. You know, I'll be honest, when I first started, a lot of times I would just bring meat to the processor and we'd get it back, no big deal. And it almost seems like a daunting task to start processing your own game. But what I've found is once you kind of ease into it, we started off with a grinder. You really find out that it's not that hard. It's very easy. And there's so much satisfaction in taking it all the way through, knowing exactly what's in that meat and then making it. And our kids love it too. Jax and Bella, we've got an LEM, a Max Vac Go. That's a little vacuum sealer that you can bring anywhere. They're out there. They're doing that. They're writing on our packages. There may be some packages that have lots of scribbles. You may not know what's actually inside, but I love having the kids be a part of that. And now we've started making sausage. We make burger. We make all kinds of different things. So that'll be one of the topics of the seminar. And one of the things in the gift basket is actually one of LEM's Max Vac Go. It's a little portable vacuum sealer. So I try to find things that are, you know, really useful for people to win and to be able to put to use in their regular life.
So Melissa, you've got some real strong bullet points at all of your seminars, but you do save some time to take questions. Also, folks come to you with a lot of questions and they'll get the opportunity to pitch those to you.
Absolutely. I love doing Q&A sessions because there's things that maybe you haven't thought of, or if you see the same Q&A, the same questions time and time again, I'll try to incorporate those in. But I love leaving some time for people who just have some questions, who's always wanted to ask. I'm right there. I'm open to whatever questions people may have. No such thing as a dumb question.
It's the 2026 Fleet Farm Seminar Tour. It starts August 10th in St. Cloud. It wraps up August 15th in Rapid City. There'll be stops in Wisconsin and Iowa in between. If you want to see the complete list of dates and times, go to melissabachman.com. Melissa, thanks for all you do to promote hunting and get out there and work and advocate and make us all improved, better hunters on the landscape.
Well, thank you for having me. I sure appreciate it, and I look forward to meeting everybody.
MelissaBachman.com for all those details. And don't forget, check out our show, Winchester Deadly Passion, on the Sportsman's Channel. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
You don't hunt ducks because it's easy. You hunt because it's earned. When the first flock locks up over the decoys, that's why you do it. This July 24th through the 26th, the grind meets its tribe in Des Moines. The Delta Waterfowl Duck Hunters Expo, presented by Hevy. 3 days of nothing but waterfowl, gear, proven rigs, calling competitions, real strategy, no fluff. Get your tickets now at deltawaterfowlexpo.com. Duck season doesn't start in October. It starts here.
From the Alaskan wilderness to the Atlantic Flyway, across America's Great Plains and down the Mississippi Delta, Ducks Unlimited has protected and restored habitat for nearly 90 years. We need your help to reach our next million-acre milestone and ensure waterfowl for generations to come. Whether you're selling tickets, securing donations, or finding that next sponsor, there's a role for everyone. Join today at ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation for a continent.
There are lakes across Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and beyond that are loaded with fish. And nobody's talking about them. Onyx Fish helps you find them. Search by species. Filter for big walleye, trophy panfish, or eater crappies. Check satellite imagery, depth maps, and public access points. All before you leave the house. And now, Onyx Fish is available on Android for the first time. iPhone, Android, doesn't matter. Just download it and start planning. 7-day free trial, then just $35 a year. Onyx Fish. Find new lakes, get there with confidence.
Elevate your tactical readiness with the Retay USA lineup, where precision meets performance. Build your skills with the RXP-22 handgun and the RA-15-22 rifle and pistol. When the mission demands full power reliability, turn to the 724 Patrol. Powered by Retay's patented Inertia Plus system, this combat-proven 12-gauge shotgun offers ultra-fast cycling, total modularity, and optics-ready performance. Experience the full tactical edge at RetayUSA.com.
The Woodstock for Hunters Hunt Stock is coming to Wisconsin to the Dodge County Fairgrounds in Beaver Dam, July 17th through the 19th. Hang out with all the boys from the hunting public. Seminars from Lanny Benoit, Dan Infault, Barry Wenzel, John Eberhardt, Billy Malls, Jared Scheffler, and Dan Small. Huge giveaways, top hunting exhibitors, 3D archery, live music, and campsites right there. Plan ahead and get your tickets online at huntstockevents.com. Use code RADIO at checkout to save 10%. Hunt Stock. Feels less like a trade show, more like a deer camp.
Hey everyone, it's Melissa Bachman from Winchester Deadly Passion, and I'm excited to invite you to my Fleet Farm Seminar Tour. This year, I'm going to be making 10 stops across Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, and South Dakota. Join me for a seminar packed with proven deer hunting tactics like rattling, decoying, and even a live Q&A where you can ask anything. Every attendee will be entered to win an incredible prize package worth over $1,000. Visit melissabachman.com for tour dates, locations, and more details.
Hey everybody, welcome back. Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Gerisline. I've got our buddy Tim Lesmeister here to help me wrap up this week's broadcast. You can read Rob or Tim in the print version of Outdoor News or at outdoornews.com. You can subscribe to either versions of that content by calling 800-535-5191, or you can do it all at outdoornews.com. Tim, welcome back. Good to see you. Man, a whole bunch of interesting stories out there this week we should circle back on. Hey, first, you know, it's an invasive species story. I don't want to get too bogged down in it because I think some people turn the channel when they hear invasive species. But you're familiar with Lake Riley in the Southwest Metro. It's very close to where I live. They're doing like the first ever whole lake copper sulfide treatment of a lake in Minnesota to try to knock back zebra mussels. Pretty big story.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how that's going to work. You know, that it actually... I'm not sure it eradicates. I think correct. It might, like you said, knock it back. But zebra mussels are very prolific, and I'm afraid that this treatment might prove to be short-lived. I have my fingers crossed that it'll work, because I think zebra mussels, they have come on strong since they've entered the Great Lakes. They just seem to be spreading like wildfire. If this works, great. I'm more power to them. I just fear it might be one of those things where every few years you have to give it this huge copper sulfate treatment just to knock the population down, and it may not eradicate the zebra mussels completely, but I have my hopes up.
Well, Tim, I'm looking at it as an experiment. The U of M has been researching this. It sounded like what was in St. Albans Bay, one of those bays there in Lake Minnetonka. They've played around with this a little bit. This is the first time they want to try a whole lake. I guess I will be surprised if it eradicates. I don't think it's going to do that. I don't think the folks at the U of M expect that to happen. But it's it's an experiment. It's the next step in trying to go after some of these nasty invasive species we got out there, like zebra mussels, which, I don't know, as AIS goes, zebes, I don't think, are the worst. They've cleared up the Mississippi River a little bit. They clear up some of the lakes they're in. There are detriments to that, too. Compared to things like Asian carp and even the common carp, I don't lose a lot of sleep over zebe. They also seem to kind of find a bit of an equilibrium after a while. I guess that's easy for me to say, not owning a dock on one of these lakes.
Well, they're saying that down in Big Stone Lake, the zebra mussels have become a forage base to the bluegills, which are now topping 2 pounds and setting state records. So I think some people might look at them as a benefit to the resource. I do not. I used to go out and fish the weed line out in Lake Minnetonka. It was like 16 feet down. You'd have a nice solid weed edge. And that after the zebra mussels moved in and the water clarity improved dramatically, now you don't really have weed edges. This vegetation grows down into 22, 23, 24 feet of water, and you don't get an edge. I liked fishing those edges, and they just don't exist anymore. Now you just have vegetation that grows out deep. It's very non-aligned, spread out all over the place, and I don't like it as well.
Tim, a couple quick beefs I want to air out a little bit. One, back at the start of the show, we talked about some changes at the Minnesota DNR with Kelly Straka leaving, Jason Meckel taking over as the new Fish and Wildlife Division director. We're also losing Gail Nosek. Gail was the communications director at DNR, and I've worked with a lot of those. And as a journalist, that sometimes can be a bit of an adversarial role, right, where you're dealing with that communications person who doesn't always, want to give you everything you want and needs to be careful and nuance some of the language. And I've dealt with some people in that role who have been horrible. Gail was not one of them. I appreciate Gail's professionalism, and she's going to be missed at that agency. So I want to tip my hat and thank Gail for what she's done. But it reminded me how in some ways we have it pretty good here at the Minnesota DNR with the amount of engagement they have with the media and the public at large through press releases, social media. And just to give folks a little bit of comparison, you go just a little bit west, the state of South Dakota. It is almost impossible to get information out of the state of South Dakota about what's going on there with natural resources. Tim, the last press release that the South Dakota Game and Fish Department issued this year, I believe was on April 1st or 2nd. Since then, the state of South Dakota has not issued a press release on game and fish matters for, arguably one of the most important states in the country for outdoor recreation.
Well, they absolutely do not want to give out any information at all, because they think of it as anything they say is going to be used against them in the court of public opinion. And the reason I say that is look at the pheasant counts.
Oh, yeah.
They used to do road count pheasants, and then they'd report it. And then one year they were down a little bit and they reported it, and they thought that was going to negatively affect the amount of hunters that came out to hunt pheasants there. Well, it didn't, I'm sure. People go to South Dakota because it's a rock solid place to hunt pheasants, and the numbers are down a little bit. So what? It's nice to know that you're going to have to maybe spend another 15 minutes out there in the field, because that's how good the pheasant hunting is, even when the numbers are down. But my point is, they've gotten to the point now where they think of any information as bad, and they just don't want to give it out. It seems a little crazy, doesn't it?
Well, democracy and the public at large loses in that equation, Tim. Some folks might think I'm being a little dramatic, but when we're not getting information from these public agencies, we don't know what's happening with our tax dollars. Then that's where things like corruption and other issues can start to erupt. Again, yeah, the last press release South Dakota Game and Fish issued was on Wednesday, April 1st. McCook Lake, no wake zone lifted. We haven't heard a word from the agency since. Now, I've got a columnist out there, Josh Hare, that I pay to write a column about what's going on in the state of South Dakota. That's why the media, that's why the Fourth Estate is so important, folks. Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisline and Tim Lesmeister, we're about to wrap up this week's show, but there's one more big story, Tim, that we got to talk about this week. It was everywhere. It was in video, so it wasn't something I could put in the print version of this week's Outdoor News. But that poor guy out in Yellowstone National Park that got tossed by that bison.
Oh, yes.
And this gets back to the troll comments a little bit, too. I am more than happy to mock and ridicule idiots who go to pet the fluffy cows, who get too close. I firmly believe that was not the case with this poor guy. He was in the wrong place at the wrong time. They say he was 65, 70 yards away. You know, he was walking along the road. This bison was just surly. It was in a campground. I mean, what are you supposed to do? The bison's in the middle of the campground. It looked like the bison kind of went after a truck, and when the truck took off, all of a sudden this guy was in the vicinity, and the bison just went after him. Where do you stand on it?
Well, this guy actually ended up with some broken bones. I felt sorry for him.
Oh, totally.
First words out of his mouth, I think, were, "Is my grandson okay?"
Oh, wow.
So he obviously was with, there was some family members, and mm-hmm. but he took the brunt of the of this animal attack. This guy got thrown in the air. I mean, it was it was Olympic gold medal performance here, from what I can tell.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I really felt bad for this individual.
There are tens of thousands of people every day, I would think, out there who are walking on roads who probably come that close to a bison, and the park says that's a safe distance. But occasionally, you know, I don't know if this guy was rutting or what, they're just surly. And again, the guy was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And, you know, I see people criticizing him. And again, I'm more than happy to criticize people who dumb things. I firmly believe this guy didn't do that. The other comment I've seen is, we need to keep people out of the national parks. This is their wildlife habitat. It's like, well, no. You know me, Tim. I'm a conservation guy. I'm a purist when it comes to things like wilderness. But we wouldn't have national parks. You wouldn't have that green space for the wildlife if it wasn't a place for humans to recreate also. You can't have national parks without visitors.
That is very true. I'm 100% in agreement with you there. But I do believe that there are those individuals out there that just go, oh, look, there's a cute little bear. Let's pull up right next to it and somebody hop out and take a photograph.
Oh, yeah.
And 99% of the time, truthfully, the odds are that nothing's going to happen. But then, of course, you get that one surly bear, that one ornery moose, that one mad bison. And this is what you end up with. So there's, my odds are 100%. You know why? Because I don't get out of the car and take pictures
right.
10 feet away from mm-hmm. a wild animal. So just keep that in mind the next time you decide that you're going to do something that I consider basically stupid.
Yeah, you see other folks jumping out, and I saw a video this week of folks jumping out of their car and trying to get close to a mama black bear and two cubs. To the bear's credit, the mama bear just scooted everyone away and got away from the road before these idiots got too close. That's a completely different paradigm than this poor guy that got hit, got attacked just randomly by a surly bison.
But people always want to interact with the animals when they see them out there. You saw that photo in this week's paper of the bear chasing the moose, and these people took, you know, fired up their truck and got between those two animals to try and save that moose. You know, bottom line is that as soon as they drove away, that bear knew that small moose was in the region, and it just decided it was going to probably go find it again and eat it. So, you know, there's not much you can do. If you see a fawn out there, don't pick it up. If you see a bear with two cubs on the side of the road, don't hop out of your car to take a picture. There's a lot of things that you have to realize, that, and one of them is that they're wild. Leave them alone.
Black bear's got the best nose in the woods. With that, Tim, thanks a lot, buddy. Good catching up with you, and have a good week ahead.
All right, we'll catch up to you soon, and I hope this smoke clears soon as well.
Yeah, same here. With that, everybody have a great week out of doors. I'm Rob Gerisline signing off for Outdoor News Radio.
Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.